This is Hitchhiking Off the Map.
So we came back to make some money to buy an apartment. Everybody has to buy an apartment there. Cannot rent.
It was just part of the way you lived. You didn't think about it. That's what we did.
I remember crying for like, I don't know how many days.
Some of it's random. Some of it's, I happened to meet a guy who knows a guy.
And then when I had cried out.
And I'm still trying to gather enough money for an apartment. So it's 30 years later now. I still don't have money for an apartment.
When I had cried out.
And when I said that I wanted my hair to look like butter, she said, I think that would be really good.
And then it was time to start doing the healing.
In the meantime, my wife has decided, since I don't have an apartment, to find somebody with an apartment. And so it goes.
Hello. Again from under the redwood trees and the hummingbirds and the mortgage in Sebastopol, California.
Hitchhiking Off the Map. And this is Elizabeth Fuller.
And Conrad Bishop. And the show is about journeys, and I guess the theme of our stories today is peace.
Now, that's going to be tricky, because when we say peace, we instantly think about war, or imminent war, or defense against war, or demonstrations against war.
Yeah, so it's kind of like the echo is wrong somehow here. Listen, peace.
War.
And so we wanted to do a show about peace that was not actually about war.
Peace. Is it an absence or is it a presence? I mean, is it about stopping something? I think it's about making something.
What is it?
What is the making? I think it's something we bloody well better find out.
First story.
First story. Moshe.
Moshe Yasur grew up in Romania, lives in New York, and now commutes to Romania as a theater director. We sat in his New York apartment, and I knew the outline of his life. But the more we talked, the more I felt this is a story about moving through the world with an open heart. The first journey was a walk he took with his parents in 1941.
Well, my first experience was that the world came down on me at the age of 6. Already the Germans and the Romanians all put their hands together to kill me. I mean, me, the little Moshe, was not yet 6 years old. In 1941, there was a pogrom in Iasi, in Romania. It was June 21. So during the weekend, about 12,000 Jews, they have been annihilated. Among them, my father. They rounded up the Jews. I remember that very distinctly on a Sunday morning. So we went out. I was pulled by my mother, and we were told to march towards the police station. And everybody was shouting, the police and the soldiers, and was, don't worry, it's just a formality. And I remember that word very well because I kept asking my mother, Mama, what is a formality? That this is okay, don't worry, they will look us over and they will send us back home, it's only a formality. So I said, I started even singing, formality, 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 formality. And when we got in there, my mother said to me, but don't worry, if they start shooting, you die right away. You are not going to suffer anything. And like in the movie, Life is Beautiful, yes? I understood that movie very well because the same way that father tried to play with that child, all kinds of games while in concentration camp, my mother played with me on the way to that police station, all kinds of games, singing. And trying to make me feel very good, not to, because she said, you die very fast, it does not hurt, so don't worry. So as soon as we got into the police station, I lost my mother, I lost my father, I lost everybody. I saw only feet, because I was a little, only legs and feet and legs, and the shooting started. Shooting started, they started shooting, and people started falling on top of me, and I was in that courtyard till evening. So I ran home. It was already evening. And I remember on the way home, I remember the street sweeps, the people who clean the streets, with big drums, those little carriages on two wheels, picking up corpses from the street and putting them in those. And I remember from those drums, from those carriages, sticking out hands, feet, and all kinds of parts. And when I got home, my mother was there already. My mother was home, and she was busy tearing a sheet to bandage her head. And I saw her head was bleeding, and she bandaged her head, but she was singing. It was unbelievable. She was singing and dancing. She said, "Does not hurt, don't worry, doesn't hurt, don't cry." So after this experience, life is beautiful. I remember in Romania last year, I had an interview at the radio. The lady said to me, "Look, you are, at the age that you are, you look very well. Our men, your age, in this country, are over the hill completely. What's your secret? Do you have a secret that you look so well?" I said, "Yes, of course I have a secret." "So what's your secret?" "Well, it's very simple. I don't hate anybody." She was extremely surprised. "You don't hate anybody? How is it possible? After all this, you don't hate anybody. So don't hate anybody, because I soon discovered that if you hate somebody, it's worse for you than for the other person that you are hating. So it eats you up." So I said to myself, "I better not hate anybody. I don't want to be eaten up alive." I and my mother have survived that attempt. We continued to live in Iași from that on, in hiding, till 1945. And in 1950, my mother and I went to Israel. We started our first steps in a long, long journey that is still ongoing. I'm 67 now, and I'm still journeying. Getting there was a breeze, because I went there legally. My mother and I, on a passport, paid by the American Joint Committee. At that time, the Romanians sold the Jews. Each Jew, to get out, Americans paid $1,000, and 1950 was a lot of money. So I was worth $1,000, which I think was more than ever. I mean, I went to Israel, I was almost barefoot, because for the time that I lived in Romania, I was barefoot. I had no clothes. We were very, very poor. So here, suddenly I'm worth $1,000. We came to Israel, and we put in an immigrants camp. In a tent. And on that particular year, it never snows in Israel. It snowed then. On that year it snowed, and all of a sudden, in the middle of the night, the tent flew from on top of us. The snow came down on us, and the rain, and well, we went out and we started to pull this tent back together. And this is my first encounter with the Promised Land. After this, you cannot go any further down. You can go only up. When we came to Israel, I worked in a orange grove, yes, and I was already 15, 15 and a half. I did that until I learned very well Hebrew, which took me about 8 months. And then I was accepted to a teacher seminary. They needed teachers for other immigrants. And the moment I became a teacher, after the first year, they saw me that I'm such a nice person, they took me to the army. So I served in the army, and thank God I didn't shoot anybody. I'm very happy about that. And then I went back to the theater.
Moshe had acted in Yiddish theater in Romania. Now he studied at the Habima, joined a professional theater, won a scholarship to study in Paris with the great directors Barrault, Villars, Serrault, worked as an assistant on Ionesco's first plays, came to New York to direct a Yiddish theater program, but it was discontinued. He was promised a college teaching job, but that fell through.
I went to teach high school on a drama license, but they didn't have a drama program for me, so I taught English. So I taught English with a Romanian accent. I said, only in America you can teach English with an accent. It was very... was an eye-opener. Because I was teaching in what is called the inner-city high schools. I come from a culture in Romania when the teacher comes in into the room, into the classroom, the class stands up. And until the teacher says, please sit down, nobody sits down. So here I come into the classroom. You are lucky. They don't shoot you. And I was very lucky. They didn't shoot me. As a matter of fact, I made very good friends with them. Because of a simple thing. I love people, and I love young people in particular. So we had a good time. But it was, for me, a revelation when I tried to explain the word similarity, likeness. No matter how I tried to find synonyms to this word, it was difficult for them to understand. So I came close to one of my black students. I put my face close to his face, and I said to the classroom, is John like me? Is John similar to me? They said, yes. The whole class says, yes. So what do you mean? Look at him and look at me. He's black and I'm red, white. Says, you are not white, Mr. Yasur. Says, what am I? You are an immigrant. So I understood why it is that for me, they accept it. I never felt alien anywhere. When I came with my mother to Israel and we were put in that immigrants camp, there were Jews from all the countries of the Middle East, Jews from Arab lands. And they looked like Arabs, not anything like the Jews from Romania, with the Ashkenazi Jews. They spoke differently, they cooked differently, they ate differently. Their music was different. And their dress was different, absolutely different. And my mother was appalled. My mother was absolutely, she almost had a nervous breakdown. So I said to her, I was 15 years old and I was 2 days in Israel. I already had some friends among them. Not even knowing the language, nothing, just from gesturing. I said, Mama, Mother, these are our friends, these are our brothers. So from the very beginning, I made friends. I enjoyed Arabic music. I enjoyed Arabic food. I dressed in Arabic. When I went to the army and I was stationed on a border town, I was an officer in the Israeli army, I made immediately friends with the Arab soldiers on the other side. We exchanged cigarettes, we exchanged food and things. And when the shooting started, war was war, and when it was quiet, we were friends. After the fall of Ceausescu, to speak about Romania, I was invited to do some work there, working in the language in which I was born. Since then, I'm invited quite often to Romania, and I'm working there more on a regular basis. So here we are sitting in New York, you and I, and... In a few days, I will be 8,000 miles away from New York. Well, maybe my second life in America that started with meeting the woman that has given the real dimension. And if you will ask me, how come you who have survived the Holocaust in Romania, you have married a German woman? I will answer the same answer that I gave my family in Israel. I would have married Beate even if she were Jewish. What I have against religions and what I have against cultures is that they try to make fences among people. You belong to this culture, you speak this language or this language, you are this religion. In Dresden, also an interview like this, I said to them, look, I want to go to a Munich to a synagogue. There were no synagogues in Munich left. So I went to church. I went to a church. There was a Jew in front of me there, crucified. And I told all my prayers that I know in Hebrew by heart. I said those prayers in Hebrew to him, and he understands me.
In New York City, we were talking with Moshe Yasur.
And on a future show, we'll have that German woman he's talking about.
Okay. I know this is hopelessly naive, but I'll say it anyway. It seems to me to be silly to say the only way to have peace is to kill all the bad people. And hey, we kill lots of bad people, and it still doesn't happen. But on the other hand, it seems hopeless to just go out and yell, stop war.
Or stamp out war.
Yeah, and then you've got the anti-war war. Well, there's a social action program of the White Dog Cafe in Philadelphia called Table for 6 Billion, Please. How about if the president asks Congress to declare a dinner party?
Yes. Next story. This has to do, I guess, with eating and, well, it's making peace on the most mundane level. I was in a fast food restaurant.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I confess. And two elderly women came in, sat near me, and I soon realized these were probably the only remaining people on the face of the earth who had never been in a fast food restaurant. They didn't know how it worked. They were in the middle of some kind of violent squabble on this alien territory. But by the time I left, they had resolved their quarrel, and they'd figured out how to get fed. Blessed are the peacemakers.
There.
Where?
By the wall.
Maybe we better move.
How come?
I don't know if they allow you to sit. Maybe they set you where they want you.
It's a Burger King. You sit where you want.
Well, some places, they make you sit where nobody sees if they think you downgrade the clientele.
They don't have clientele. It's a Burger King. I didn't mean to make you mad.
I wasn't mad.
You got pretty mad.
I don't get mad. I got high blood pressure, so sometimes I turn red.
You call me names.
What names?
You called me F-A-R-T.
I was just stating a fact.
We'd better order.
I'll order. I'm going to pay for it.
No, you're not.
I am. But what do?
We decide what we want, then we go on up to the counter.
Well, if we're both up there, somebody's going to come sit here. The government's bringing in all these refugees.
Then you go up in order, and then come back, and then I'll go up in order. Then we both pay for our own.
Not if I say so.
Oh, you think you'll spend a buck and get on my good side?
You don't have a good side.
I don't get stuff like this from my other friends.
You don't have any other friends.
I value the freedom. I'm going to have a hot dog.
If they have it.
They have to have a hot dog. They're competing for customers. They'll sell you whatever your heart desires. They'll sell you a burger on a stick. They'll sell you a toasted cat. They got thousands of people, night and day, that's devoted totally to figuring out what you want.
They have no idea.
Well, I want a hot dog.
Then you better go get it.
I wasn't trying to make you mad. I was trying to offer sympathy. I was trying to do some good in the world. I read an article. What my retarded sister taught me about life made me wish my sister was retarded.
You better shut up on the subject.
I'm not saying a word. How do you feel?
Well, if you want to know, I feel like death warmed over.
Well, check the menu. I was telling a joke.
Some patriot said to George Washington or something, I regret that I have one life. That's how I feel.
Oh, they don't believe in Washington or Lincoln anymore.
No. No, it's just the hope. It's just not having the hope.
That he might show up sometime?
Not anymore.
We better order. They'll call the cops on us, coming with police dogs. I'm hungry.
Oh, I have to see what's on the coupons.
I don't need a coupon.
Well, we got them. We better use them.
I don't have any.
No, I got these 2-for-1s. If you don't use it, I can't use it. It takes two.
This is not a 2-for-1.
No, this is, but... Okay, this here. Now, look. You can get a cheeseburger, and if you get a cheeseburger, then you get fries and a medium Coke.
I don't want that.
Well, there's that. Or... You can get coleslaw if you get the bacon double cheeseburger. And that comes with soup.
I'd rather have soup.
Well, that's what you get.
I don't want the bacon.
Well, don't. You have to have the bacon if that's the deal. They have it worked out, so they make a profit. They give you a good deal. And you both have to play the game. If you want something else, then don't complain if you get it.
Ah, why can't I have what I want?
Because we got the coupons for this.
I'm paying for my own.
I don't want you to pay for your own. I want the treat, Jack.
It's no treat if it's not something I want.
It's a treat when I say it is.
You are nuts. You're just trying to start something because you feel sorry for yourself. You should be ashamed. I mean, you're not alone. You got friends. They brought over their cat. You're in the hospital, you get a ton of flowers. I come to visit, there's no place to sit. I felt like a weed. There's no reason for you to act like that. You didn't care nothing about him when he was alive. You hadn't seen him for 18 years, you told me. And he treated you like dirt before. You done all right without him, didn't you? So now you'll do all right without him some more. Look at all the stuff you bought.
I'm hungry.
So am I.
Shut up and let's eat. What else they got here?
Well, they got the Fun Pack. A hamburger and fries and a Coke. Comes in a funny box.
That's for little kids.
I think you can have it if you want.
They don't call it a Fun Pack if they think old ladies will buy it.
Old ladies can have fun.
Name one.
We have to go up in order or we sit here and starve.
Millions do. Ethiopia sit there and starve.
They don't sit in a Burger King.
You having a good time?
Yes. Are you? You are. And you just don't know it.
I have to see what I bought.
Don't you know?
Nothing I need.
You're just full of sunshine.
What really hurts? What hurts is I never saw him get old. He was always young. And I knew he had his women and that hurt, but I knew we'd get old together. And then he takes off. And I threw all his stuff in the trash. Every damn thing. But stuff keeps turning up. Old shirt stuffed down in the paint cans. Ashtray from Yellowstone. Junk mail for 18 years. And then a letter. Hello, I'm your ex-husband's daughter. He's dead. Best wishes. It hurts to get the damn comfort. It hurts that there's nothing left to want. I wake up early morning. It's too early to get up. There's nothing to do, but you can't crawl back into your dream. I cart all this trash and all I got to set and talk is an old blubbery cow like you.
I said I was sorry for you.
Yes, you did.
Well, I'm not.
Okay.
That make you feel better?
No.
At least you got me.
Okay.
I didn't want to make you mad.
No.
There's a time for everything. Time for laughing, and time for crying.
They say so.
Time for shopping, and a time for staying home.
That's right.
Time for eating lunch.
I'm not very hungry.
No.
It's not so easy to figure the ins and outs. There used to be waitresses once.
That was another time.
That was a better time.
Seems like now.
Didn't then.
You never had him. You just had a coupon that said you did. Told you the terms of the deal.
You had to have the burger when all you wanted was soup.
He was some burger.
Raw. We better head for the bus.
Don't you want nothing to eat?
I'll fix some coffee.
You said you were starving.
Well, I thought you was gonna eat.
Well, not if you don't.
It's too complicated. I think my feet are better now.
I'm ready when you are.
We still have to pay.
You'll pay for our own.
It's my treat.
I said no.
Like it or not.
I said no. We never ate.
So we don't have to pay.
We already paid.
I'm gonna take some sugar.
That was Peace Negotiations from our live show, Family Snapshots. The actors were Elizabeth Fuller and Rochelle Strider. Rochelle is the other half of a company called Infotainment. They do touring shows. And you can get information from estrider at juno.com.
Hitchhiking Off the Map is a production of The Independent Eye, supported by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts and the Hitchhikers Guild, which you can join online.
Online means our website, www.independenteye.org. You can listen to any past shows. You can order CDs. You can see what we look like. Or browse through the 29-year history of the company and look at lots of pictures of our live performances, because it's kind of hard to do masks and puppets on the radio.
The next show, a cargo ship, the Golden Venture, ran aground in New Jersey with a cargo of illegal Chinese immigrants. Corporate lawyer Hannah Dunlap took on the case of one man and found herself in very deep water.
Peace and joy.
The word formality in Romanian is formalitate. Navetinșo grijă, e o formalitate, formalitate. And I turned around to all the little boys with whom I was playing around, all the other Jewish little boys. I said, don't worry, formalitate, no, nothing to worry about.